You're listening to a podcast from 702. Reedy Cabby on 702, your number one news and talk station on 92.7 and 106 FM.
8 minutes past 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is the afternoon drive. My name is Reedy Cabby, and I'm driving you home until 6 p.m. This afternoon. I'm in our Cape Talk studios, and it's always such a happy and beautiful place. I mean, they've got more beautiful studios than we have in Joburg. The people are more chilled. Everyone just arrives on time, including yours truly. And I've been following all the commentary on social media about the weather in Cape Town, that there's this massive storm coming and schools are shutting down, and everyone I know has been telling me to pack a coat and whatever. So I went into my wardrobe and I packed the heaviest coat I have. I mean, this is the coat that wasn't good enough when I was in Denmark a year ago. And, you know, it was meant to be spring, but it was very, very cold there. And this coat was inadequate for that weather. So for this weather, I thought, well, it's going to work. It's going to work. And I arrive in Cape Town with my heavy coat. I can barely walk. My back is so sore from carrying this coat. It is warm and sunny and lovely, and Cape Town is as beautiful as ever. Schools have shut down or are shutting down tomorrow because the weather is expected to get even worse. There's a massive storm, some storm clouds gathering. Look, I've got pretty big eyes, and I'm reasonably intelligent. I'm not seeing any signs that things are going to be dark and somber tomorrow. But hey, it is the weather, and that's why it is unpredictable, because, well, anything can change in a split second. I think also the news of the day, if we were to use the Cape Town weather as a metaphor, the recession. We find ourselves in a technical recession. I've been following a couple of economists, and their commentary about why we are where we are. A mixture of bad governance, they're saying. And it's very interesting that some of South Africa's respected economists are not talking about external global factors that are out of our control. One gets a sense that this is something that we could control with the right attitude. My fear, I must be honest, is that at the highest level, there isn't really a grasp of what all of this means. What it means for pensions, what it means for food prices, what it means for fuel and transport. I just get a sense that there isn't an appreciation of the depth of the problem and what it would take for a crisis to be prevented. So that's where I'm coming from. What with ministers who say that you know, let the rand fall, we'll pick it up. Well, it has happened today. Where is that minister and his special WhatsApp group to help us out of this malaise and this dark cloud, as it were? So we'll see how that goes. We're going to have a conversation about it. Another important issue, and I would like you to start imagining it in broad terms, that is political party funding, which was on the agenda in Parliament. Parliament's inquiry into the funding of political parties is officially underway. The National Assembly has agreed to the formation of a multi-party ad hoc committee to look into the matter. Now, it's very important when we approach these discussions to bring history and context to bear, because it's not the first time that there's a conversation around party funding. In fact, there's copious amounts of reviews and research that has been written, and it's important to understand why there was resistance. And this is the one issue over which political parties, opposition and ANC, agreed. But I get a sense that the tide is turning. There are many who are demonstrating an appetite for this conversation to happen. And what has brought this on? I suspect state capture. So don't look at it in isolation, because in some instances, state capture doesn't just benefit individuals. It is benefiting political parties as well. And perhaps that's why they have not been forthright, some of them in the ruling party, in calling out the state capture that we are talking about in contemporary politics, because perhaps some of the dots link back to some parties. And we'll talk about that another time. But here's something else. Popo Molefe is joining us. He's the chairperson of the PRASA board. Again, context very important. The board dissolved by the last transport minister. They went to court. The court ruled in the board's favor, and now the new minister is basically flexing muscles and saying, tell me why I shouldn't get rid of you. Bopo Molefe joins us now, chairperson of the PRASA board. Good afternoon to you. We thought that you were over this chapter. What is happening now? Why are we back here again?
Well, we can't be over, because I think those in authority can't wait for the 31st of July. I think staying for another month and 2 weeks probably has a major impact on the agendas at stake. but that seems to be the case, because I don't know why people would repeatedly shoot themselves in the foot in this manner.
Are you implying that the minister's position or request, wanting you to explain why you shouldn't be disbanded, could also be problematic as the previous minister's decision?
Well, I think this is a function and in the purview of legal experts. All I can say is that it is not as simplistic as the minister seems to think, because there are certain obligations that he too needed to have met, and he would obviously have to demonstrate what he has done about it. He does attempt in his letter to, in a cursory way, refer to some of the issues. But look, I have to take legal opinion on these matters and then respond appropriately to what he's asking us to respond to. He's raising again the issue of the investigations carried out by Worksmen. It would seem that is one of the reasons why the board, the directors, should be dismissed. But we will deal with those details at an appropriate time. But all I'm saying is that the country does not need these repeated acts of embarrassment.
There's another side issue, and I think it's equally important. You talked about Worksmen's, but I remember my last conversation with you. You were concerned that there were no prosecutions in the inquiry that PRASA itself had done into dodgy contracts and money that went missing, whatever the term that we're using, but wrongdoing, basically, when it came to PRASA resources. You'd expressed frustration that there was very slow movement in that regard. Where are we as far as that's concerned?
With regard to that matter already, we have filed an application, the urgent application in court, to compel the Directorate for Priority Crimes Criminal Investigations to explain to the courts and to the South African public why they are failing to discharge their constitutional mandate as an organ of state. All these things that we have investigated and have uncovered, they should have uncovered them long before we did so. But they have not dealt with them, so we want them to explain to the South African public. I have been advised this morning that they are saying that they are opposing our application, which means they don't want to do it. They don't want to deal with the major criminal offenses. We have given them forensic capacity so that they can analyze the information deriving from Section 205 subpoenas. We want them to tell us what they have done about these matters.
And also, I must bring in the public protector, because the former public protector also did an inquiry. You'd think that the ground is kind of laid for this to actually happen. Does that mean that report now is being ignored? There's no forward movement as far as that is concerned?
Well, from our side, we have done a hell of a lot of work, and that's why we spend so much money on this case. We've done a lot of work. The NPA, as well as the Directorate for Priority Criminal Investigations, should be able to proceed with certain critical cases before the court, both in terms of civil action and in terms of crime. But by now they should have been able to freeze certain assets. But they, because they are not doing anything, it means they are allowing room for the flight of capital, those monies to move around and disappear.
But here's where those of us who are outside the process kind of get concerned with this whole intricate web of or cloud that is hanging around PRASA. Joe Maswanganyi, who's the new Minister of Transport, before even becoming Minister, it seems, was very critical of the PRASA board. And then we have the Deputy Finance Minister, who also is being accused of some wrongdoing. He's a new deputy minister, wrongdoing when he was still at PRASA. I mean, that doesn't instill confidence in the public, Mr. Molefe.
It doesn't, ma'am. It does not at all. I know that the minister, when he was a member of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, he was one of those leading the assault on the board of PRASA. Yet, when it came from the responsibilities of his predecessor, for example, with regard to the appointment of the group CEO of PRASA, they remained silent. We attempted to appoint the captain of this ship called PRASA, but it was frustrated by the minister because it is required in terms of the shareholders' compact that we consult with the minister. We consult, we interview, we send recommendations on who should be appointed, and it gets there, no movement. Then he turns around, he says, together with that other minister, that this board is failing to turn around the company. They are not reaching their targets in terms of the annual performance plans. Their internal controls are weak. Supply chain management matters are not being complied with. But you can only do those things if the company has got a leader at an administrative level, because these directors are not full-time directors. Besides, they have repeatedly complained, even the current minister, when we attempted to get management to do their work to crack the whip, they said we were interfering in operations. So it served them that we stay a distance from management. Yet when management do not perform, they blame it on the directors.
There is also a story around the Gupta emails and how PRASA was looted, billions. I think the figure was at 6 billion. I mean, you're the chairperson of the board. What does it all mean? How has this impacted on your ability as PRASA to deliver on your mandate, given that that sector of public infrastructure serves South Africans across the board, especially the working class who travel distances to get to places of economic activity?
Well, really, my concern is that you're conflating the Gupta story, which relates to Eskom and Transnet. You're now conflating it with the issues at PRASA. We've never had dealings with the Guptas. So I don't know about the 6 billion you are referring to. We are investigating irregularities, and we said in respect of the toll locomotives and automated speed gates, as please close. The automated speed gates the cameras, surveillance cameras, monitors, and so on, which involves Yangena and Sifambo. these are cases that involve close on to 8 billion rand, 7.5 billion rand. We were busy with that. And as you know, that we have been repeatedly being told no, to settle with Yangena, we should not go to court. I think very soon we're going to expose some of the things that might have happened with Yangena, which reflects also or impact on the decision of the minister this week.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Popo Molefe, chairperson of the PRASA board. Here we are again. We thought that that hurdle had been overcome, but the minister has written to the PRASA board. Thank you for talking to us today. And yes, it's true. I had moved from one issue to another, talking about that one that was in the emails around the locomotives and so on. But Popo Molefe clarifying matters there. Thank you very much for your time. This brings the time to 22 minutes past 3.